Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, live from the WNYC studios in Soho. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us. And a new documentary about the life of Boston Celtics great Bill Russell. L.A. Laker great Jerry West, now 84 years old, says, quote, "I loved Bill Russell. He had a soul. Some people have no soul. He was one of the most unique men I met in my life. I don't say that because of his success as a basketball player. He was a leader. He was an activist when it was not proper to be an activist at the expense of his own career." And that was from someone who Russell Celtics beat. The film Bill Russell Legend brings together some of the greats of the game: Bob Cousy, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Renee Montgomery, Steph Curry, Chris Paul, to tell the story of the late athlete who was admired for his work on and off the court. Born to a family in Louisiana, his family just a couple of generations from enslavement, he went on to be his ancestors' wildest dreams: an Olympic champion, a five-time MVP, an 11 championships as a player, and the first black head coach of the NBA. He had more championship rings than he could fit on his fingers. He led the Boston Celtics in the late 50s and 60s to become one of the most dominant dynasties in sports history. He practically reinvented defense. He was a king of the rebound. He saw the game like no other. But Bill Russell was more than just an iconic NBA player. What makes him a truly legendary human was his commitment to civil rights and calling out the racism he faced on a daily basis from his own fans and Boston's for what it was: ugly. He could be prickly, wouldn't sign autographs, was known to throw out sharp words that cost him friendships. The two-part documentary, Bill Russell Legend, streams on Netflix starting on February 8th. And with me now in studio is the film's director, Sam Pollard. So nice to see you in person.
Very nice seeing you too, Allison. Great to be here.
So the film after the credits. Actually, let me start back this. The film begins actually with Bill Russell's death. There's a beautiful beginning, and then the credits run. He died July last year. How long had you been working on the film before he passed?
We had been working on the film for about 2 years.
Wow.
I had been approached by the former president of HBO Sports, Russ Greenberg, if I was interested in directing this documentary, you know, which was originally a series about Bill Russell. It became a two-part film. And I didn't hesitate. I said yes, because I grew up in the 60s. Mm. I was very familiar with Bill Russell. I was familiar with the rivalry between Bill Russell and Will Chamberlain. So I was excited to jump in and do this documentary.
How did things tone? How did it shift after his passing?
Well, we didn't have a sequence in about his passing. So immediately we knew that we had to create a little sequence at the very beginning and also at the very end that dealt with his passing and the fact that he was going to retire his jersey across the whole NBA. And then we had also done it, our last interview was with his widow, Jeanine Russell, who gave us some really interesting insights about who Bill Russell is and what he meant to both players and what he meant to the African-American community.
Yeah, when he passed over the summer, we did a call-in with Jemele Hill and Howard Bryant from ESPN. And it was extraordinary to hear people call in about how much he meant to them. It really was beyond just him being a player.
Well, I think the thing that hopefully comes through in the two-part films is that Bill Russell was just a phenomenal human being off the court. He was a civil rights, a human rights activist. He understood the importance of standing up and speaking out. I mean, here's a man back in the late 50s and 60s who went to the March on Washington with Dr. King, who went down to Jackson, Mississippi after the death of Medgar Evers, who was involved in the busing issues in Boston, who was at the, you know, the Cleveland Summit with Jim Brown and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He was a man who stood up for his principles. Now, it's not to say he wasn't a complicated human being, but that was another part of his personality that we wanted to really bring out and show an audience.
A moment I found fascinating was when he was first asked to be on stage with Dr. King, he declined. And I thought that said a lot about, he declined because he felt like he hadn't been there doing the work, which I thought was a really interesting insight to the way his mind worked.
Well, he felt politically he hadn't done enough. He'd done some stuff, but not enough, not to the same level as a Dr. King or Ralph Abernathy and the other members of the civil rights movement. So that's why he felt he shouldn't be up on stage, to take away the spotlight from the importance of A. Philip Randolph, you know, Dr. King, and all the other people who were at the March on Washington, which I thought showed that he understood what his role meant in the community.
My guest is Sam Pollard. The name of the documentary is Bill Russell Legend, streams on Netflix on February 8th. There's all this great old footage. Where did you find it? What was the process like of acquiring it? Just all that really good old Celtics footage.
Well, the thing that's always, you know, wonderful about doing these documentaries is if you bring on a great archival team. Mm-hmm. And we had a wonderful archival producer and her team that was led by this woman, Helen Russell, who had done lots of sports docs. And she was able to do a really deep dive and find the material of Bill at USF, mm-hmm. Bill in the Olympics, Bill in his first years with the Celtics, you know, and his teammates to be able to see him with Casey Jones and Sam Jones and Bob Cousy and Satch Sanders. So if you have a great archival producer, it's worth he or she or they are worth mm-hmm. their weight in gold in helping you find the material. The other two things that we had that was important that my producer, Ruben Atlas, really said we should really dig into was taking excerpts from Bill's books mm-hmm. that he had written. And we went through those, and those excerpts from the book that was read by Jeffrey Wright really gives you insight into how complicated he was, both as a player and as a black man. He was a guy who by, you know, the 67, 68 year of his career in 1967, mm-hmm. 1968, wasn't as sort of excited about basketball anymore. He was being worn down physically mm-hmm. and mentally. And so it didn't surprise me as we got to that last Game 7 in 1969 against the Lakers where they beat the Lakers, the Celtics beat the Lakers, that Bill Russell walked away from the Celtics, walked away from the city of Boston, and walked away from his family to go on a search to find himself, which led him to Los Angeles and a whole, you know, trajectory in his life that was very, very different.
Who did you know that you wanted to talk to for this documentary? How did you get your hit list?
Well, we put together a long list of people with my executives. And we knew that we wanted to talk to Bob Cousy. He was the first interview we did 2 years ago.
He's a riot.
He's a great character.
This is a great character.
And we interviewed Satch Sanders, another former teammate mm-hmm. on that same shoot. We also knew we wanted to interview Magic Johnson. We wanted to interview Larry Bird. We wanted to interview Dr. J. We wanted to interview Kareem, Shaquille, Renee Montgomery, we interviewed. We interviewed Tommy Smith, but he didn't make it in the cut, you know, because we talked about a little bit about in one of the earlier versions about the 68 mm-hmm. Olympics, you know, in Mexico City. So there was a long list of people. I mean, one of the last interviews we did besides Janine, Bill's widow, I went down to Orlando and I interviewed Oscar Robertson, which was a phenomenal treat for me, you know.
One of the things, I think it's Shaq who says it, describes about how modern day players are like big babies compared to, you know, if the temperature isn't right in the hotel room, they have a fit versus what a man like Bill Russell had to put up with.
Well, you know, Kenny Smith says it in the film.
Is it Kenny? I can't remember who.
Back then, you know, the things you could do as a black man, you could lose your life.
That's right.
You know, and Kenny understood, you know, the sacrifices that a Bill Russell would make to stand up for his principles, you know. Mm-hmm. When him and his black teammates were in Lexington, Kentucky, and they refused to play because they weren't going to be served in the hotel, that said a lot about who Bill Russell was. And even someone like Earl Monroe, who we interviewed, said, you know, players back then didn't usually take stances like that because, you know, it could have recriminations mm-hmm. that could hurt your career, you know. So you got to really admire Bill. And you look at what happens today with players like LeBron and Chris Paul. They're standing on the shoulders of Bill Russell.
And they understand that.
They understand it. And what's interesting to me is when we interviewed Steph Curry, I was very impressed that Steph had even read Bill's autobiography, you know, and that he kind of knew exactly what Bill Russell was all about. Because a lot of these young players may not know the level of importance Bill played in the evolution of the game, but they saw Bill Russell because he would always be at those NBA finals because they named a trophy after him. You know, he would be there, you know. So they knew who he was, but they didn't quite know, you know, the legacy that he had, the rich, important legacy. I mean, you talk to young people today and you say, who's the greatest basketball player of all time? Usually the discussion is LeBron, Michael Jordan. But you got to put into that discussion, Bill Russell and even Will Chamberlain.
For sure. My guest is Sam Pollard. The name of the documentary is Bill Russell, Legend. So in his life story, born in Monroe, Louisiana, grew up in a segregated neighborhood, just like I said, a couple generations away from enslavement. His family decides to leave when they're nine. They hop a train to California. How did being part of Isabel Wilkerson calls them the Sons of the Great Migration. What impact did that have on the way Bill Russell moved in the world?
Well, here's what I would say. His family moves to Oakland, and he has an opportunity to go to a school where he's able to, you know, shape his sort of athletic prowess in his career. Mm-hmm. And he's at a school where a lot of African Americans had migrated to Oakland, and their offsprings also became athletes. I mean, if you look at the people who came out of the school that he went to, McClendon, Frank Robinson, Veda Penson, Kurt Flood, you know, Bill Russell, that's pretty phenomenal, you know, that these athletes came out of that. They became out of the part of that migration. The migration for those of us as African-American families who believe that the sense of possibility would be greater leaving the South. Now, it didn't always work out that way because de facto segregation existed in these northern enclaves. But it was the dream that these, you know, that black people had.
Bill Russell settles into his new life. Let's listen to a clip of Jeffrey Wright narrating Russell's memoir regarding his love of the library as a child.
I had my own private world, and my most prized possession was my library card from the Oakland Public Library. I went there almost every day. I'd check out reproductions of paintings and take them home with me. Prints of Da Vinci and Michelangelo. Those paintings held me spellbound. I would study a Michelangelo for hours, trying to memorize each little detail. It took me weeks before I was satisfied that I could close my eyes and recreate anything resembling what I saw in the reproduction. Then I would psych myself up for an acid test, drawing the painting from memory. The result always frustrated me.
So it's so that becomes so interesting because it becomes important to the way he would play the game towards his basketball IQ, that he could envision things on the court. Tell us a little bit more about how that time of his reading, his love of painting, his love of art, seeped into the way he played ball.
Well, he understood that the game of basketball is just not about being physical. Mm-hmm. It's about being mental. It's about understanding how to position yourself and play against other players. You know, where you should be, where your one of your teammates should be to get the ball, to take it down the court, to get a basket, to know when to get a rebound and where to sort of get the rebound and how to use that. So when he was at USF with his future teammate, Casey Jones, they came up with these strategies. That's what they would call themselves, you know, rocket scientists. Mm-hmm. They were really thinking about the physics of basketball. And it just goes to show you that athletes are very intelligent people, you know. They're not just jocks. They're very intelligent. But Bill took it to another level in terms of understanding the science and the physics of the game and how to use the game to his advantage. We could think about it this way, Allison. When he would play against Will Chamberlain, he was 6'9". Will Chamberlain was 7'2". Will Chamberlain had 30 pounds on Bill Russell. Will Chamberlain could outscore him. He could probably out-rebound him. But Bill Russell understood that if he strategically knew how to contain Will Chamberlain just to a certain degree, he could help his teammates get baskets and win games. As Red Auerbach says in the film, it wasn't about how many points a player would score. It was about who would win the game. And if you look at the stats, the Celtics always were on top when it came to playing against any team that Will Chamberlain was on.
I was so interested in the idea of Bill Russell being able to jump high and how that just changed the way people thought about being a defender. Like, in the time I grew up, like, of course you would do that, but that was considered rad at the time.
It was radical because you're supposed to stay, keep your feet planted. All of a sudden you become vertical and you go up. People were telling him that was the wrong way to play the game. That's what he was hearing from his coach at USF, the wrong way to play the game. But something that Nelson George says in the film, which I think really pinpoints the importance of black players in the evolution of the NBA, was that when Oscar Robertson, Bill Russell, Elgin Baylor came into the game of basketball, They brought with it the black athletic aesthetic, mm-hmm. a new way to approach the game. And you see that, and you know, you're going to see that with black players in football and baseball. When they bring that skill to those games, mm-hmm. it changes the whole way you approach the game, and it has elevated every one of those sports.
Following up on that point, the NBA was all white.
All white. There were barely any black players on the team. So
it's
when,
wild.
When Bill Russell's talking about playing his first game against the team that Bob Pettit was on, and the crowd was yelling things, you know, don't get near him because, you know, he's Sue Chocolate, mm-hmm. you know. He was the only black man on the court, you know. And you could see that he had some mountains to climb, but by the mid-60s, the game was evolving and changing. And it was definitely, as we all know, basketball is a black game.
Mm-hmm. Name of the film is Bill Russell Legend. It streams on Netflix February 8th. I'm speaking with his director, Sam Pollard. You brought up Wilt Chamberlain. You know, it's the press called them rivals. I think Bill says, no, they were just competitors. What did you observe after, you know, really thinking about the way these two men had to interact with each other, engage with each other? What was the relationship?
I think it was a relationship where they were competitors. I think mm-hmm. what Bill Russell understood was he was a man, in terms of Wilt Chamberlain, who was phenomenal, a phenomenal ball player. He was a man that I had to figure out how to play against and to sort of figure out how to control my sense of play against his sense of play that it would help my team. Mm-hmm. Bill Russell understood that even though Wilt Chamberlain could score 100 points a game, he could have more rebounds in the game, he was not a team player. And Bill Russell understood that. That's why he had 11 championships in 13 seasons. What did Wilt have? Maybe 3 championships in all of his years? You know, mm-hmm. Bill Russell understood that. But what was interesting about that dynamic was that when the Celtics would come to Philadelphia, Chamberlain would have Russell come to his house to have dinner. You know, yeah. Most players wouldn't do that. They would sit down and have dinner and hang out. But then when they would go to play, Wilt Chamberlain's mother would always say to Bill Russell, don't beat up on my son too badly. not that you would have to worry about Bill Russell beating up on Wilt Chamberlain.
We have to talk about Boston. You know, Bill Russell once said, I play for the Celtics. I don't play for Boston.
Right.
Boston has earned its reputation in many ways as a very racist city. While he was a Celtics player, how did he feel about wearing the jersey? How did he feel about, given how poorly some of the fans behaved?
He always said he was a Celtic. Mm-hmm. He loved being a Celtic. He loved wearing that green. But he didn't love the Boston fans. And think of it this way. Here he comes. He really becomes the linchpin in the mid to late 50s of the Celtic team. Mm-hmm. And the Celtics fans, even when he starts to be the one to help the Celtic players win championships, who do they think the greatest player on the Celtics is? It's not Bill Russell. It's Bob Cousy, mm-hmm. who's called the Houdini of the hardwood, right? And
Right.
But Bob Cousy understood the difference because mm-hmm. Bob Cousy says in the interview, I was the man before Bill Russell came on the scene. And when Bill Russell came, he became the man because he became the linchpin mm-hmm. that turned the Celtics into a dynasty. But the Celtics fans never embraced him. And the sad part is that when him and his family moved out to Reading, Mass., they were not welcomed with open arms. I mean, you know, the story that when they left, they were on a trip. Somebody broke into her house and he defecated in the family bed and rolled on the walls and destroyed the house. You know, you could see why Bill Russell, mm-hmm. you know, had a chip on his shoulder about the Celtics fans. Why he wouldn't go and be honored initially when they wanted to honor him mm-hmm. and retire his number. You know, but in some ways, as he got older, like a lot of us, he mellowed. So that's what, near the end of the film, you see him go to that ceremony.
Yeah. Let's listen to a clip from the film Bill Russell Legend. This is a clip of Russell speaking about his role as a black athlete after being asked by a reporter.
Do you think the new black athlete can collectively bring about any social or political change?
I can say things that I said over the years that because I had a position of power and that I was very good. But conversely, that made me have more to lose in the sense of what they were talking about. But it was nothing to lose. to me, because if I don't have my manhood, I don't have anything. Athletes are products rather than people.
I got that sense from the film. Not only did he feel a responsibility, he also felt it very personally. I took away from this film that Bill Russell was actually an emotional man.
Oh, extremely emotional.
You know?
Extremely sensitive. You know, and you can see it through everything he did. Every sentence in some of those autobiographies, you can feel the sensitivity he had about being a black man in America, you know, mm-hmm. and about the responsibility he had to stand up. You know, he just didn't want to shut up and dribble. He wanted to stand up and have his voice heard, you know. So, no, I think he's a very emotional human being.
When he was first offered the opportunity to be a coach, Bill Russell refused at first. What was behind that?
Well, I didn't think he felt he had the ability to be a coach, and, you know, it was going to be a lot of responsibility to coach a team and also be a player. Mm-hmm. But then he realized when Red Auerbach was making certain suggestions, you know, that besides Red Auerbach, the only person who could coach Bill Russell was Bill Russell, you know. And imagine this, back in that period, 66, 67, 67, 68, 69, he didn't have what they have coaches have today, a bunch of assistant coaches mm-hmm. and trainers and all that stuff. He had to do everything and also play. It had to be really tough. I mean, Chris Paul even said that. I don't think I could do that, you know, and so did Steph.
He was, you know, you mentioned earlier how he got worn down and he decided to leave the game. What did he want to do when he went to the West Coast? It seemed like he was actually trying to pursue a little bit of fame and fortune, but it didn't seem to be the sort of felt like an ill-fitting suit to me when I watched him going down that road.
He was trying to figure out, I think, how could he turn his sports celebrity into something that was going to be, you know, much more lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because he was really close with Jim Brown, who had done that. Jim Brown had left the Cleveland Browns and become a pretty well-known actor, mm-hmm. you know, making lots of movies and becoming a star to a certain degree. And I think Bill, in somewhere in his mind, looked for that. I mean, you saw that little clip we have where he's in Miami Vice.
Yeah.
He's terrible.
He's really bad.
You know, he's doing commercials. Mm-hmm. He's on the Flip Wilson show. He's on, you know, he's doing all these shows. He's trying to figure out. He was searching. He was searching mm-hmm. for what's the next step for me after this, you know, illustrious basketball career, you know. And I think, you know, he may have never found the same kind of satisfaction he had as a basketball player. You know, he became a coach of the Seattle mm-hmm. Supersonics and the Sacramento Kings. He was successful with one team, but not so successful with another. He ended up moving to Washington State. You know, I think he just, you know, like, you know, he's still a young man, mm-hmm. so he was looking for something else in his life.
The film also talks about the Bill Russell laugh. That laugh was such a signature, and it was also such a icebreaker in a way.
It was an icebreaker.
Do you know what I mean? When you think about how intellectually strong he was, how emotional he was, and then this goofball laugh would just pop out.
Yeah, it would show that he was human. That he could open up to people, you know, and we did that little montage where you hear that cackle of his.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of broke the ice, you know. It enabled him to sort of say, ah, take a breath, you know. And he also had the other thing where before every game he would vomit.
That's right.
Because, you know, it was like, you know, superstition. Mm-hmm. If he didn't vomit, maybe the Celtics wouldn't win. So he had these little tics, you know, mm-hmm. that were part of his personality, you know. And then, you know, he's famously known for not signing autographs. He wouldn't sign autographs. He felt like it was more important to talk to a fan than to sign a piece of paper. Now, when I mentioned this to Steph Curry when we interviewed him, which we didn't put in the film, Steph didn't quite understand why Bill Russell wouldn't sign an autograph, because for him, as a major sports celebrity, mm-hmm. that's part of his responsibility to sign autographs. But Bill didn't feel that way, not even with his teammates.
It was a hilarious scene, I won't give it away. What was something that his daughter told you that was really useful for you in making this film? Whether or not you used it or not, but it was just some piece of information that really was helpful.
Oh, I think the most poignant thing that she told us was how much she loved her father. That, you know, the father-daughter connection was very strong. And you could see that there was a he felt this, she felt this real bond with her dad. That comes mm-hmm. through every time she talks about him, you know, that father-daughter connection.
The name of the film is Bill Russell Legend. It streams on Netflix starting on February 8th. I've been speaking with its director, Sam Pollard. Sam, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, Allison. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.